people and Arabs in particular. We find ourselves in a grave predicament. True, expressions of hostility and discriminatory enactments existed earlier, but until now they were moot. Since 1967, they are no longer so, and the possibility has been breathed into them by the demand that such laws should be applied here and now. Thus, they have been actualized and made plausible. We can no longer shrug our shoulders at the hostile material on the pretext that it is a very minor as well as extinct part of the Judaic tradition. Indeed, I suspect that the new developments in the Jewish religion constitute transmutation of great significance. As these changes occur before our eyes, we may fail to appreciate how revolutionary they are. What has surfaced cannot again the argument that Kahanism is an aberration is disposed of by Huckabee after Rabbi Mikhaen's election to the Knesset. Many religious Jews began to describe him as an anomaly, an aberrant weed that had grown in the garden of Judaism. It seems to me that this explanation is simplistic and evasive. First, Kahane is not alone in holding these views. Focusing exclusively on him distorts the true picture. Significant parts of his platform are shared by many others, including important rabbis and heads of yeshivas. The Kahanist phenomenon extends far beyond the narrow confines of his declared supporters, even if most religious Jews have grave doubts about many of his positions. Second, Kahane and other religious extremists certainly do not represent all of Judaism. Who does? But they do represent certain element found within it. They mark the extreme of traditional Jewish concepts. As has been said, their stand is based on texts drawn from the greatest sages of our tradition. Citing good texts for humane attitudes toward the stranger does not Kahane's use of the tradition hinders the religious moderates' campaign against the extremists, for fear that opposition to him will be taken as an attack on the great sages upon whom he relies, which would disqualify the moderates in the eyes of the religious public. If Kahane is twisting and distorting the texts and the meaning of Halakha, the rabbis ought to prove it. The assertion that Kahane and his ilk are perverting the spirit of Judaism is rather far-fetched. It is hard to say what the true spirit of Judaism is. Ultimately, this is a matter of subjective impulse. David Shipler, in his masterwork and Pulitzer Prize-winning book entitled Arab and Jew, Wounded Spirits in a Promised Land, also points out the tendency of the religious extremists to cite only scriptural texts, that Gushim Unim activists take what they wish from the contradictory sources. As the 11 and 12-year-old boys in Kiryat Arba explained, they are learning in their yeshivas that the Arab is Amalek, the enemy tribe that God instructed the Jews to fight eternally and destroy. Amalek was the first of the nations, but his latter end shall be that he perish forever. Numbers 24:20. Haggai Segal, a settler from Ophrah, was quoted in the Settlers' Paper Nekudah as declaring, "The Torah of Israel has nothing to do with modern humanistic atheism. The Torah yearns for revenge. Such a Torah is not humanistic." Expressions of bellicose intolerance are given religious sanction and rationalization, which then filter into some segments of the lay populace. Some rabbis, such as Eliezer Waldenberg, winner of the 1976 Israel Prize, declared that Halakha, Jewish law, required strict separation of Jews from Arabs, preferably an apartheid system, or, better yet, the expulsion of the goyim, all non-Jews, from Jerusalem. An American correspondent and his family became targets of some of this chauvinism in the Jerusalem neighborhood where they lived. The word boy was scratched into the paint of their car, and the children were hassled by Israeli youngsters on the street. Zohar Indraus, an Arab in the mostly Christian Galilee town of Tarshiha, remembered Jewish youngsters in neighboring Mollet making crosses with their fingers and spitting on them. Another rabbi, writing in the student newspaper of Bar Ilan University, near Tel Aviv, argued that the Torah prescribed genocide against the modern Amalek. At the Gushim Unim settlement of Elon Moreh, when security men went to investigate the murder of an 11-year-old Arab girl by settlers, they were met with signs reading Ishmili Police, emphasis supplied. Shipler also sees Kahanism as a serious threat. In the year after his Catch Movement's election to the Knesset with one seat, Kahane's popularity soared to the point where, by the autumn of 1985, the public opinion polls recorded enough support for him to win 10 or 11 seats in a new election. even allowing for Israelis' propensity to vent their frustration and anger more extensively on questionnaires than at the ballot box. The Kahane phenomenon alarmed the liberal-minded establishment enough to prompt President Chaim Herzog to tell a group of high school students in a Tel Aviv suburb, "I think it is a disgrace to the Jewish people, and that is how it looks to the whole world that a person could rise in the Jewish state and present a program that is very similar to the Nuremberg laws, the measures promulgated by Nazi Germany in 1935 to strip Jews of their rights." Kahane satisfied the lust for simplicity that is fed by rage. He offered order as an antidote to uncertainty, complexity. It is clear that a malignancy is growing within the body politic of Israel. The Israeli people cannot be fully alerted to the seriousness of this threat if they are lulled into the belief that the powerful and influential American Jewish community either supports the policies of the Likud and the religious extremists, or is indifferent to them. Begin clung to office on the strength of the boast that he could handle the Americans. Shamir is playing the same game. An article appearing in the Los Angeles Times February 2, 1989, edition, entitled "Jewish Doves See Need to Criticize Israel," again calls attention to the critical need for diaspora Jews to speak out. The Hagdovish members of the international Jewish community agreed here Wednesday that there is a need to speak out against Israeli policy in dealing with the Palestinian uprising in the occupied territories. Dora Kass, director of the New York office of the International Center for Peace in the Middle East, was a member of the American Jewish delegation that met last December in Stockholm with leaders of the Palestine Liberation Organization. She recalled the criticism she received at the time from fellow American Jews, but she said the meeting may have encouraged PLO chairman Yasser Arafat to take a more moderate line in a speech to a meeting of the UN General Assembly later that month in Geneva. Kass said she believes that concerned Jews have not only a right but also a duty to speak out for peace in the occupied territories, the West Bank of the Jordan River and the Gaza Strip. And she argued that American Jews should articulate their disagreement with Israel's tactics in suppressing the nearly 14-month-old Palestinian uprising. Otherwise, she said, Israeli leaders will not get an accurate impression of the anti-violence sentiments held by most American Jews. Kass said it was the failure of American Jews to object to Israeli policy, out of what she called a misguided desire to maintain Jewish unity, that led Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir to say on returning from visiting the United States that all American Jews are behind me. Huckabee emphasizes the seriousness of the failure of the moderates in the absence of a strong opposition to religious extremism by recognized Jewish religious and lay leaders abroad, and by the chief rabbis and the political leadership in Israel, is apt to be considered a tacit tolerance of its views. So far, the reaction of moderate religious circles has been weak. Stronger reactions will come only if the matter becomes urgent, if public debate embarrasses the religious and lay leadership. It will not move of its own accord, because of the roots that the extremist positions have in the tradition. It is not the call for a discussion of the problem that is damaging, but rather the reluctance to grapple with it. Let us remember that what is at stake is not some secondary question, or a problem that will go away if it is ignored. The struggle is for the soul of Judaism and its status in the world, and for the moral and political status of the State of Israel, emphasis supplied, in addition to the racial discrimination which is rooted in the religious concept of the chosen people, there is virulent and widespread racial antagonism which pervades the Israeli population, both religious and non-religious, which is sociological. This has been discussed briefly in Brusinski's comparison of Israel to South Africa cited earlier. The Palestinian Arabs comprise a distinct underclass politically, socially, and economically. India has its untouchables, the Israelis have the Palestinians. They do the menial work, jobs that Jews will not stoop to: garbage collectors, janitors, dishwashers, construction workers, fruit pickers, etc. The word Arab has come to have a pejorative connotation. Arab work is menial work, don't act like an Arab, can mean any number of unattractive attributes. The prevailing attitude among most Israelis toward the Palestinians is one of fear but mostly contempt. They believe that Arabs must be treated brutally, because force is the only for many Palestinians. Daily life is one of harassment, humiliation, and intimidation. Palestinians of the